love giant antlers. And when I'm out hunting, I'm daydreaming of giant antlers and giant animals. But what's more important to me is filling that freezer.
Welcome to the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Youngdyke. The National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast is presented by Rep Your Water and their 3% for conservation commitment. My guest today is Michael Cravens. Michael works for the Arizona Wildlife Federation, our affiliate in Arizona, and actually last year's affiliate of the year. I was instructed that I had to interview Michael from our mutual friend, Jesse Dubell, who's the executive director of the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, who you can hear on one of our earlier podcasts as well. And with a recommendation like that, I had to follow it up. Michael, tell me about your role with the Arizona Wildlife Federation and what brings you there.
Sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me. This is exciting. This is my first podcast too. So bear with me. I'm a bit nervous and misspeak here and there. What brings me to the Wildlife Federation is, well, obviously, you know, a lifelong interest in the outdoors and wildlife, but then also kind of a perfect storm of events that allowed me to take this position, you know, when it was presented to me. Fortunately, I was working in another career that I didn't necessarily want to be in, but it paid our bills. And that was during the time that my wife was going back to school to become an RN. So upon her graduation, she went to work right away. And this position was presented to me. And as you know, in advocacy, you know, it's not a high income position. So having my wife become the primary breadwinner, that allowed me a little freedom to get out of what I was currently doing and explore this as an option. And I can't tell you how happy I am to be in a position doing work that matters to me and it matters to all of us. So yeah, I'm extremely happy to be here and doing this.
Well, as a fellow employee of a conservation nonprofit corporation, you know, some people hear the word nonprofit and they assume that means that nobody makes any money. And us as employees of a nonprofit, we do get a salary, but it's often not much over not making any money. So, right. But it allows us to advocate for wildlife and conservation and the things that we love. Tell me about what you'll be doing in your new role with the Arizona Wildlife Federation.
Sure. My position is advocacy and communication coordinator. Right now, on a personal level, what I'm trying to do is learn as much as I can and at the same time also be productive and be worth keeping around. But primarily, I am taking the workload off a lot of our board members and volunteers so they can be freed up to do what a board's supposed to do. I'm handling a lot of the communications, magazine development. I'm handling the e-newsletter. I'm handling all the social media. And on top of that, you know, and you know, I feel like this position is probably going to evolve as they move along too. And of course, I'm open to that. But honestly, right now, I'm just want to be useful while I am learning the position. So yeah, there's a lot to learn. But I'm excited to be here and excited to be doing it.
That's great. And you know, your board has left some big shoes to fill then if you're taking anything off their plate, because Brad Powell, I got to meet him at the annual meeting this year. You know, their work helped Arizona Wildlife Federation become actually the affiliate of the year. Tell me a little bit about the Arizona Wildlife Federation, its role in the state, a little bit about its history, maybe some of the things that you're working on now.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first off, you mentioned Brad, a terribly, terribly impressive, well-educated, well-spoken man, and I consider myself very lucky to be working as closely as I am with him now. But aside from Brad, our board, I'm not going to make up numbers here because they'll screw it up, but there is a large amount of professional agency and biology experience on that board. I mean, we have people that have been, you know, doing this, you know, either in advocacy are with Arizona Game and Fish, 50 plus years. So we have a number of these gentlemen, and it's amazing the amount of knowledge we have on our fingertips with the board here. So regarding what the kind of things we're working on, a lot of it, is federal level type stuff that we're all experiencing, whether that be Land and Water Conservation Fund or the Recovering American Wildlife Act. And of course, climate's a big one. Here in Arizona, we feel the effects of this, I think pretty clearly in the form of drought. And of course, with drought, you get wildfires. And of course, with that, for instance, our population of Mount Graham red squirrels, a federally listed subspecies. Again, I want to be careful not to shoot numbers out here that aren't exactly accurate, but that population took a severe hit through wildfire. So it's a big deal out here in the Southwest, and something that we're currently always looking at, working on. Other than that, mining is always a big issue here. We have the Rosemount mine in Southeast Arizona that it pops its ugly head up from time to time. We have the uranium mining up around the Grand Canyon. That's a big issue. So these are all things that we watch and work on.
And to this position, you actually bring quite a bit of experience in the outdoors. To issues like this, a lot of experience with the wildlife that you'll be advocating to recover, a lot of experience on the public lands that you'll be advocating to keep and protect. Tell me a little bit about your experience as an outdoorsman and a naturalist.
Yeah, of course. Okay, that goes back a long, long way. I'm 44 years old now, and I have spent my entire life deeply immersed in natural history. I mean, it's been my driving force since I was a young child. And, luckily I grew up on the edge of a small town in Missouri in some Ozark border country that allowed me to, make basically daily expeditions, out exploring the countryside, the farmland, the wooded hills and rivers around my home. That along with, I should give a shout out here to my grandfather was bedridden with multiple sclerosis. His best friend was named Fielding Chandler. Fielding Chandler was the oldest scout in America. The man lived to 102 years old, and he took it upon himself. And my father was out of the picture when I was young, but he took it upon himself to take my brother and I out either hiking or paddling every single weekend. So, this stuff was ingrained into me at a very young age, and it never wavered. I mean, even throughout my teenage years, when I was being a goofball, I still had this. I had the outdoors. I was introduced to hunting by a neighbor of mine, actually through fishing, because as a lot of kids like me or you, we probably share a childhood obsessed with fishing. But I got introduced to a neighbor that hunted, and him and I started taking our pellet guns after squirrels. And of course, this was, back in days where we had a bit more freedom to roam and explore. And, had some grand adventures, and I got hooked. That took me through into my mid-20s, hunting and fishing, started fly fishing seriously. That started taking me out west. It was when I got out west that I was introduced to other areas, more what people like to call the non-consumptive side of outdoor recreation, that I started backpacking a lot, and I started paddling. I've done some just exquisite long backpack trips. I did the Appalachian Trail back in 2000. Then I did the Continental Divide Trail, which travels from Mexico to Canada through the Rocky Mountains in 2008. Then, from then to now, lots of little trips here and there, traveling around this country. I've spent a lot of time studying and looking at crayfish when I was back east. Reptiles and amphibians have always been a very serious interest of mine, and a big reason that I ended up in the Southwest. Then, let's see. I told you this was going to be a long story.
That's all right. We're here to listen.
Got out west here. Well, I met my wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, and we came out to Arizona just to explore. We both took jobs as adventure guides. Ended up having babies out here, getting married, and our roots got deeper and deeper. And it was at that point that I had always wanted to start hunting again. After I took that long break where I was just playing around with backpacks and whatnot. And we were out here for about 5 years, and I decided that was long enough. And I jumped back in, and I have not looked back. So that ended up leading me to Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And I should throw in there that I did volunteer and did a lot of advocacy work with East Ozarks Audubon Society back home. And I was doing that in my early 20s. So it was basically me, a buddy of mine, and a lot of old folks on the small board of directors. But we had a big impact on our area. You know, we designated a new nature sanctuary. You know, we put up bird feeders and built a blind, and it's still there today. So I'm really proud of that. But getting back out here, starting and hunting again, it brought me to Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And you know, that's a fantastic group of people, you know, and there's a lot of crossover with that and the Wildlife Society and those kind of groups, whether it be Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Wildlife Society, Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, or Trout Unlimited. I think they really attract good, thoughtful people that, you know, or maybe you could call them conservationists first, hunters second, or anglers second, but people that care about the outdoors and care about what happens to them, care about the future of them.
So. Yeah, I've definitely noticed that here at the National Wildlife Federation, as well as in our affiliates like Arizona. I actually used to work for our affiliate in Michigan before I came to work here, as well as I was on the board of our state chapter of BHA as well. And I find like a lot of our advocates that work on the same issues and care about the same issues generally become members of all the organizations. Yep, and yep. A lot of them kind of, basically, if you go to 2% for conservation and look at the organizations that those companies support, it ends up being kind of this group of organizations that often, you know, we all have slightly different missions and focuses. But if you put us together, we kind of work in the same space and the same issues. And it kind of makes a complete conservation mosaic when you put us together. Have you found that with Arizona hunters and anglers as well? Were they the ones that kind of brought you back into Western hunting? Did you find that on your own? Or did you find some mentors?
I found that on my own. And then that kind of took me to them.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, I think like you and I discussed earlier, what I like about these groups is they kind of fall firmly in the middle of what I personally anyway would consider two opposite extremes. So, and I want to be careful here, but there's, because neither of these I want to represent as extreme, because I don't believe that. But if you would have an idea of, you know, the kind of work the Sierra Club does versus the kind of work the Elk Federation does, we fall right in the middle of there. And, you know, we're firmly bipartisan. And this is how I feel on a personal level, too. So I feel like I've landed in a really good spot for me, because my ideologies are true to the organization I'm working with. But and that's what I like about these groups is they can – I see the value in both the consumptive and non-consumptive sides. And I know those are delicate terms, and I know there's a lot of argument on, you know, if they even apply. But it's an easy way to explain it. You know, I've lived and played on both sides, and I see value on both sides and the value the value in the work that all of these groups are doing, you know, even if I don't always agree with every little detail.
And with the National Wildlife Federation, I know the way that our state affiliates operate as well. The way I like to describe it is that we're like the Willie Nelson of conservation, where the rednecks and the hippies can all get along. And kind of what we do is we're not just in the middle of the two sides, but we're actually all encompassing of people on a little bit of the extreme on one side and the extreme on the other side. And with the National Federation, at least, we have 52 state and territorial affiliates. Rough estimate, I'd say probably 29 of those are primarily the representatives of hunters and anglers in their state, and the other 23 represent maybe like the State Audubon or Environmental League or Watershed Network. But what that does is, at least for our policy resolutions, which determine what our actual policies on the conservation issues are, it keeps our position in the middle, because neither side is really going to let the other one go too far. And where our policies land is where those two sides can find common ground for wildlife. And at least as an employee, it means that when I'm set to advocate on an issue and communicate about an issue, I know that that's an issue where both kind of the more environmental side and the more hook and bullet side have said, you know what, we can agree on that. Let's go do it.
Yep. Yep. And that's why I'm excited to be here. That's the space I want to work in.
Yep. Now, when you talk about consumptive, that reminds me of the hat that you're wearing. Of course, if you're listening to this, you can't see this, but we're chatting on video chat, and I noticed that both of us are wearing Hunt to Eat ball caps from Mating Patelis's company that he recorded a podcast with us earlier this summer with Nicole Qualtieri as well. But you're an ambassador for Hunt to Eat as well, not just a customer like me.
I am.
Tell me about that process. What do you do as an ambassador? What about that concept appealed to you?
Sure. Well, first off, I will never fib. I love giant antlers. And when I'm out hunting, I'm daydreaming of giant antlers and giant animals. But what's more important to me is filling that freezer. I take a great deal of pride in the fact that 95%, basically at least all the red meat, you know, minus a few chickens here and there, that my family consumes is wild meat. And that's meat that my taking had literally has zero environmental impact, other than the gasoline it takes me to go out there and get it. And I know that's not feasible for everyone, but it makes me feel good about my family and how I'm doing things. So the food aspect of hunting is a very big deal to me. It's taught me how to cook as well. You know, if you're going to kill an animal and bring it home, you want to show it the respect it deserves and do your best with it. So I've learned a lot with that. In fact, myself and my partner, Jonathan Odell, who is widely known as a small game biologist in here in Arizona, we won the Wild Game Cookoff at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous last year. And I've still got the trophy sitting up here next to me. And with our current pandemic, I might not even have to give it up for a while. So I would be happy to give it up to someone else, but it looks like I might be hanging on to it for a little bit.
Michigan came in what, second or third? I know they placed, but you're the one.
I don't remember all the places, but yes, I remember them. I remember them placing though. I was excited and beer fueled. And so the whole thing's a big old blur to me, but it was a great time and some fantastic dishes were made for sure.
You've got a pretty full freezer this year.
I've had a great year.
Tell me a little bit about how your season went over the past year and some of the animals that you hunted
and
the meals that you made from them.
Yeah, this is going to sound like bragging, but I promise you, it's literally just a representation of how lucky I was this year, and I was lucky. I don't think I've mentioned yet. I have two small children. I've got a 4-year-old little girl and a 7-year-old little boy and a wonderful wife. So I'm busy. You know, I think anybody in that part of their life will understand just how busy that is. And I'm also an obsessive outdoorsman that needs my time in the outdoors. So it's hard to get out. It's very hard to get out. Plus, I live in the middle of, I think, what is touted as the fifth largest city in the world. I might be wrong, but it's a big city and I'm right smack dab in the middle. So not easy to get out and get a hunt in before work in the morning kind of thing. But this year, I got extremely lucky. And every one of the animals I mentioned, I literally took on my first day out. So if you look at my Instagram page, you think, oh, this guy's in the field all the time. Not really the case. I'm working all the time, taking care of my kids all the time. But I just got really lucky this year. So I started with an elk, with my rifle. I started with a bear I took with my bow this year, and that was exciting. Kind of a spot and stalk situation on the ground, 8 yards away. So just a really exciting hunt there. Terrible pack out following up, but, and bear has quickly become one of the favorite meats of my family. Everybody loves it, and I love it. But
black bear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, black bear. We haven't had grizzlies in Arizona, unfortunately, for a very long time. But fortunately, I guess, depending on who you talk to. But then I took an elk with my rifle, and of course, that's the big one. That's the meat for the year, you know. And it's an internal struggle I'm having regularly. Is here in Arizona, you know, it differs depending on what you're doing, but you're looking at anywhere from 3 to 5 to 7 years in between bull elk tags, especially rut tags. So I have this dichotomy of wanting to put meat in the freezer every year, which I can almost hunt every year for cows. But also, you know, I want to go out and chase those rutting bulls with my bow. And so I got to figure out what's more important, is filling that freezer or waiting on that tag. But following that up, I took a deer with my bow, a mule deer with my bow. And then my boy and I, we went out just a couple weeks ago, and it was his kind of first big game hunt. And we ended up working hard all day and ended up with a javelina. Now, to be clear, again, every one of those animals was taken on my first day out. Again, purely luck, no wow. skill there. But to even it out a little bit, in Arizona, we can take one deer per year. So my deer I took in 2019, 2020 comes around, I can buy another tag and go chase deer again, you know, for another month. And I hunted hard that month and I didn't kill anything. So it didn't even get close. So it wasn't all great. So hopefully that's not a representation of what 2020 is going to be like for me, but hopefully this lucky streak holds out. But
that's great. What do you use for ammunition with your rifle hunt for your elk?
Oh, sure. I've gone all copper, or monolithic, and I'm not trying to make a political statement there. You know, I try to be respectful of everybody's opinions and ideologies, but for me, it's a no-brainer. They work. They work great. I've had zero bad experiences. Barnes is what I'm shooting now.
Okay.
I would recommend everybody try it. You know, even if you're unsure about it, give it a try. It shoots great, and it drops animals.
You know, that's what I hear. I haven't hunted elk because here in Michigan, we do have an elk herd of about 1,000, but we get about 50,000 applications for about 200 tags every year. Yeah. You get one a lifetime, and I haven't drawn it yet. But you know, at the National Wildlife Federation, we encourage the voluntary use of non-lead ammunition. Absolutely. But you have an interesting program in Arizona in the Condor region where the Arizona Department of Fish and Game incentivizes the voluntary adoption of non-lead, you know, through various measures in that range. Is that the area where you are, or is that a different part of the state?
Actually, you know, I was up in that area. I did not pay attention because I was already shooting copper, but I was in unit 10 this past year, and that goes all the way up to the Grand Canyon. It's a big unit. And that is where our condos are. As far as that incentive program, I know that there was, I remember reading there was some incentive, there was some free ammunition available, things like that. It is a voluntary program. They strongly want you to, but I don't know what the current state of those incentives are, so I can't really speak on that. They do encourage it, and I think that's great. And I think a lot of people up there do take it seriously, and I certainly hope so. I know they've had a lot of success with that program. I just can't speak on the exact details.
Yeah, and I did a little bit of research on that for a paper I wrote, article I wrote for National Wildlife Magazine, just on the basic details of it. They do that. They do trade-in for ammunition. And if you don't do that, then they encourage you to pack it out. I think they have something like a 95% compliance rate with that. And it's actually become a model for voluntary incentive programs as opposed to regulatory, like what California is doing.
Arizona is very much one of those states that doesn't like being told what to do. I think that's great in a lot of cases. In a lot of cases, maybe not so much, but in areas like that, you can't argue with the results. You know, people do seem to respect it. I think they appreciate not being mandated to do things. And, you know, Arizona loves to like point fingers at California when it comes to the mandated things, but
I'm happy to help you do that. when you started using copper, was it, was there a consideration of not leaving lead, in the game meat that you put in your freezer? Was it primarily for the performance of it?
No. It was primarily for the environmental impact. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen a California condor. They are an exquisite beast. you know, and I love all birds, all raptors, you know, I'm not just a sportsman. Yeah, I love all manner of wildlife and I get excited about all of it. And if I can lessen my impact on the overall ecosystem by making a simple switch like that, you know, that's my motivation. Now I will say, sure, do I feel good that the meat I'm serving my children isn't full of lead? Yes. You know, I don't want to do that. You know, even if it's just a small, tiny fraction of a chance that could be harmful to them, you know, you don't expose your children to that. And it's just such an easy thing to do, you know?
That's great to hear. I've switched myself, and I'll be honest, it wasn't on my radar before I came to work for the Federation. And for those same concerns up where I hunt and fish, we have eagles and loons, and they're the reason I switched for start tying flies to make
loons
sure that
all my
flies
too.
Contain non-lead and all that kind of thing. Now, do you still have quite a bit as far as sustaining you through you know, into now, as all of us, at least much of us around the country, are in this lockdown state, and we're making.
One thing about this unfortunate situation we're in with the pandemic is, it's for me anyway, it's made me realize how fortunate I really am. And granted, it's a little scary that my wife works in a hospital, but she works in a heart hospital, so right now she's not on the front lines of it. I know they've had a couple cases there. And you know, that could change, obviously, if things get worse. I'm extremely grateful I got a freezer full of meat. A lot of people don't have that. And, you know, that might not become an issue for us societally anyway. I've got a lot of faith that we're going to be just fine as a society. I'm grateful that I do have this position, which allows me to largely work from home during this. So my wife and I are both employed. We got a lot of meat in the freezer. I'm in a very good situation. And yes, it's made me realize just how well off I am. You know, a lot of people are really hurting right now. I feel for them, but I'm also very grateful to be where I am right now.
Yeah. And it's kind of the approach that we've taken at the National Wildlife Federation as well. Our offices are closed at least through the end of April. Everybody's working from home, but everybody's working, and we're all very grateful for that.
There's still plenty of work to do. There's no question about that.
We're privileged in being able to do that, because a lot of folks aren't. And certainly keeping people healthy is our first concern. And helping folks get back on their feet if they're not in that case is the second. So we've actually slowed down some of our advocacy, understanding that some of our federal issues right now are not at the top of the priority concern for Washington right now, and we recognize that. What is Arizona Wildlife Federation doing? Are you all working from home now as well?
The staff is. Yeah. You know, we've got 3 full-time staffers and a few contract people. Fortunately, there's plenty of work to keep us all busy. And you know, your statements mirror, you know, us in Arizona as well. You know, public safety comes first. A lot of fun stuff has been canceled. You know, hopefully we can get back to normal and get all these things rescheduled. But for now, yeah, it's no public events. We're toning back our fundraising type of stuff. You know, people are hurting right now, and you don't want to hammer them for donations. A lot of the same things that you just spoke about. Just trying to be careful and move forward delicately. Still get our message out there. Still communicate with our supporters. Keep our heads down and drive through.
Yeah. Now we're still doing work. We've shifted into is a lot of the background planning to make sure that we're successful with, you know, we still have a job to do for wildlife, and we're still doing that job. In fact, I met you for the first time earlier this week on a video conference call for Recovering America's Wildlife Act planning. So all that's still going on. We're still doing the behind the scenes job. We're shifting, we're adapting, we're still working for wildlife. But we're being cognizant of the situation and understand what the first priority for the country and our neighbors and our family is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, these things that we work on, they're not just going away. They're there and they're still a big problem. If they try to slip that uranium mine in there in the Grand Canyon, we're going to be right there fighting it, you know, regardless of our current situation.
Now, you have children that you mentioned, mm-hmm. 4 and 7. Is that right?
Yes.
Have you taken advantage of the free ranger Rick program going on? Just so folks know, we publish Ranger Rick magazines, and at least through the middle of the summer, we've made all the online content free for folks who are newly homeschooling their kiddos. Have you had a chance to take a look at those yet?
Man, you put me on the spot. And I'm so ashamed of myself. I have not yet. I was just talking this morning how I got to take advantage of that. I grew up with that magazine. So I'm a fan, and I want that to be a part of my children's lives. But, you know, as you know, it's working from home with two kids. And if my wife's at work, I've got two hungry kids all day long. They're always hungry. You know, I've got a 7-month-old German short-haired pointer pup that is full of energy. You know, and I got to get my kids some kind of education, you know, while they're out of school. So it's tough juggling all these things. So that's my excuse for not having signed them up yet. But, you know what? I will promise you right now it'll be done by this evening. And it is something I've been planning on.
Yeah, I had a neighbor ask me how I'm keeping busy. I said, we've got two parents working from home full time while also trying to take care of a 13-month-old toddler. I said, the problem isn't keeping busy. It's finding a spare minute. I think I've tied fewer flies since the lockdown went into place than I did in the month beforehand. So.
Yeah. I hear all these stirrings about people with time on their hands and needing something to do. And, you know, I got one buddy here in Arizona, Dave Ross, just a fantastic human being. He's on the board of directors with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and just a phenomenal wild game cook. And he is spitting stuff out on social media every day. And I'm just feeling inadequate. I don't know where. Actually, you know what? I know he doesn't have time. He's a nurse, but he's finding it somewhere. And I don't know how people are doing it because I'm just busy as could be.
Yeah. Well, I'm privileged to be busy, and privileged to be busy getting to interview you and learn about your work in the Arizona Wildlife Federation. It's part of my job. Where can people learn more about the Arizona Wildlife Federation?
Sure. It's azwildlife.org is our website. Definitely get on there, have a look. There's a lot of good history about us. You know, you can find out who our board of directors is. You can find out who our staffers is. You can find out about projects we're working on. And also you can sign up for our e-newsletter, and that will keep you up to date. Then, of course, we have the regular social media channels. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, and you can find us on Instagram. So any of those sources can keep you up to date on what we're currently working on.
Great. And since we already mentioned Hunt to Eat, and they help support our non-lead campaign as well, check out Hunt to Eat at hunttoeat.com. And as always, check out Rep Your Water at repyourwater.com, who supports the podcast with a 3% conservation commitment. Any final words for the listeners before we sign off, Michael?
Oh, not so much other than, man, I'm repeating myself, but I can't tell you how happy I am in a position, you know, serving, you know, listeners like you have, you know, the people that care about this, and, you know, and they're all out there working hard on it, volunteering their time. And here I am in a position where, you know, I get to work on this for at least 8 hours a day and get paid for it. And I'm extremely grateful for that. And I certainly hope I can make it all worth it, earn my keep, so to speak. Yeah, that's all I would have to say, I think. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be serving folks like your listeners.
Terrific. And from what I've heard about you from folks like Jesse Dubell in New Mexico, you'll do a fine job of that. So go back and check out the episode with Jesse, as well as the episode with Matsin Patelis of Hunt to Eat as well. This has been the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Youngdyke.